We will read Sefer Rus in a few weeks. And in the story of Rus, there are three major male protagonists, all of whom, either in the text itself or in the Medrash, are we would call wealthy individuals. And each one is of a different character, both when you read the Megillah itself, the text of Rus, and when you look at the Midrashim especially. And I think that in some ways these sketch three portraits or three different kinds of, I used the term gevirim, although maybe that's not the correct term, maybe the term would be ashirim. A gevir probably carries a certain connotation or a certain assumption that they actually give. I'll talk about that. But anyway, I wanted to really explore this through the lens of Sefer Rus and Chazal. So firstly, just to take a few minutes just to sort of highlight some of the aspects of the text of Rus. The first character we're introduced to is Elimelech. And we don't know very much about Elimelech, other than he's mibeis Lechem Yehuda, and he lived at a certain time, and the text itself doesn't tell us anything about him, but he goes to Moab, and v'shem ha'ish Elimelech, v'shem ishto, Naomi v'shem shnei banam achlon v'chir nafrasim, mibeis lechem yuda, v'yavos de Moab ayushan. So they go to Moab during a time of famine. It seems like a reasonable thing to do. There was a famine in Eretz Yisrael. Avraham Avinu went down to Mitzrayim. Yitzhak was going to. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him not to. So this fellow goes to Sedei Moab. And the next thing we hear is Vayamas Elimelech Yishnomi Vatishayir Hiu Shnei Venosah. So then Elimelech dies. We're not told why. Things obviously go downhill from there. One thing that we might get something of a sense is Vayisu Lahem Nashim Avios. His children certainly do not see themselves as separate from Moabite culture. They marry Moabite women. There's a debate as to whether they converted or not. But basically, that's all we know about Elimelech. He's a guy, he died. The story continues. The next person we're introduced to among the male protagonists is Boaz. Boaz is described as a relative somehow connected to Naomi. But the first thing we encounter of Boaz's actual behavior, he sees this young woman. He is a, you know, in the words of the Medrash, he's one of the Gedolei Hador. It probably doesn't mean the same thing that it means now. It means something slightly different. He sees this literally someone who in their society is a nobody. Vayomer Boaz el Rus, halo shamati ti al tochilu kol pesadercha v'gam lo savri mizeh v'chosid bakim na'arasai. So he basically tells her to stay here. He makes her feel welcome. And really effusively, he really speaks highly of her. She wonders why he would even pay any attention to her. She's nobody. And he says to her, Hugedu Godly, they told me what you did, what your actions were. So basically, you have someone here who's from the most prominent layers of society, dealing with someone who's really from the lowest echelons of society, and he welcomes her, almost as if he's talking to someone who is some kind of an equal. The story continues again. He tells her, "You're not a stranger. You've come to take refuge under the Kanfei Hashchina, and you should feel welcome." And when it comes to time to eat, everybody gathers to eat. His workers. You would imagine that the poor people would have been shunted to the side, and instead, "Vayomer la Boaz le'eis ha'ochel, goshi halom ve'achalt min alechem mitaval pitech bachometz." And basically, she sits with a kotzrim and she eats like everybody else. He takes this stranger and he welcomes her. He makes her really part of a community. And then finally, before the last interaction at this stage, is he tells her that im hanarim asher li tidbakin ad im kilu eis kalach katsir shali, which is really an amazing statement. He basically says, "You stay with my people. Don't go anywhere else. You are absolutely welcome here." And something that you would not have expected, generally speaking, in terms of people's treatment of the poor. So that's the first narrative of Boaz with Rus. And, okay, so that's very nice. Some people are very inclusive. But then we get to the second story. And the second story is that Rus comes in the middle of the night. He falls asleep. She comes to the Goren. She attracts his attention somehow. And he's a little bit scared. What happens? And she says, "I've come because you're the Goel." And his response to her, again, is not to blow her off, but Brucha at Lashem Biti. Heitavt chastecha acharon harishon. What you've done is incredible. He's presumably somewhat older, and naturally, maybe she should have taken up company with one of the younger people. And he says, that's an amazing thing, because she was doing that basically as a chesed. She was still connected to Naomi and to that family. And so he makes her a promise. He says, you know, don't worry, I'll take care of you, but you know there's someone who comes before. Now, you know, many of us know that what typically could happen when you get that but is that he didn't really actually mean it. It's like, you know, I'm going to pretend that we're really inclusive, that I'll take care of you, but you know, but there's someone else we got to ask first. And so, before he sends her away, a number of things happen. Firstly, he tells her Shechvi Araboker, which is very interesting in its own right. That would not be a recommendation anybody would give to Yeshiva Bacher in such a context. And the Midrashim, by the way, pick up on this point. And Boaz, at the same time as he tells her to stay at night, he's very worried about Vayomer Ayivada Kiva Haisha Hagoren. He doesn't want it to become known that a woman was there. Now, before he sends her, he tells her to bring her kerchief, and he pours out Sheish Seorim. The pshat is probably not six barley corns. There's a medrash about the significance, but he sends her with something for her mother-in-law, right? He's got his own business to take care of. He's got his own silo, his own goren to thresh, and yet before he sends her on her way, he makes sure that she brings something to her mother-in-law. And then she comes back to Naomi. And Naomi says to Rus, "Vatomer shviviti, ara sherti de'in echi pol davar." Let's just wait. What happens? Ki lo yishkota ish ki im ki lo hadavar hayom. So Naomi somehow has figured out that Boaz is not just blowing her off. You know, the question one can ask: there are one or two possibilities. Possibility one is that Naomi ulanamimo dalisha. She knows Boaz. He is connected via family. According to one tradition in the Medrash, I think he should actually have been her uncle. And she knows who he is as a person and says, he's not blowing you off. He's going to take care of it. Just wait. You don't have to wait very long because he's going to take care of it as soon as possible. Alternatively, there may be something in Boaz's actions itself that tell Naomi that this person is not simply a guy who's, you know, going through the motions, but he's actually real. So that's, Boaz is the second person. And obviously, the portrayal is very, very positive for good reason. And finally, we get to the Goel. One of the questions, I don't know the answer to the question, but what is a Goel? And we know it, this week's parasha, as it turns out to be, is the parasha of the Goel. We know a Goel means literally to redeem. But it has some type of a legal significance, which I have not been able to find any of the Rishonim treat. Parshas Bahar, there's a role, we know what he does, he buys the field back, but there seems to be some significance to this description of a Goel. So we have this person who is called the Goel, ironically, because he's not the Goel in the end, it's Boaz. But Boaz says to the Goel, "Vayomer leGoel, chalkasa sada asher lachinu le'alimelach machrona mi hashava mistemoav." So we have this part, this field, that belongs to the family that needs to be redeemed. And presumably there are financial costs involved in that. So Boaz says, you are the first right of Geula. So the Goel says, Vayomer, Anochi Agol. Now I assume that there is a commitment being made here by the Goel, some type of financial commitment. It's, again, not clear what it is, but there is some risk, there is some undertaking that needs to be done. And then Boaz says, oh, by the way, Vayomer Boaz, Biyom Kenosachasa de Miyad Naomi. When, on that day that you have repurchased the field, Miyad Naomi. So by the way, also, there's another part to the package. Also, it's a funny kind of sentence because it's miyad nami umeis rus. You think the sentence would end umeis rus hamoviya? Maybe the goal was hoping that. Oh, another field there, and then eshes hameis kanisa. Oh no, rus goes along with the package, and all of a sudden the goal says, "Vayomer haGoel lo uchal legali penash chisas nachlasi ga'alacha tasku lasi kilo uchal legal." He doesn't. He's scribe something, we'll talk about this a little later. Borealis says, you know what, it's not for me. I can't do this. He was willing to make a certain kind of sacrifice. He was willing to be Goel V'Sadeh and the cost that that entailed. But when the ask is that he also take in Rus HaMoaviyah, then he says, I can't do it. So we have these three characters. We have Elimelech, but the text doesn't really tell us very much. He dies, so that presumably doesn't sound like it's a good thing, but people die. Then we have Boaz, who clearly comes off as a prince among men. And then we have the Goel, who you might describe as a businessman. There's a business proposition that's made. He's willing to do it. He's willing to make a sacrifice. It's not just that, it's not just a buying opportunity. But then, when it's clear what the package entails, he backs away. So I want to take a look at how the Midrashim, various Midrashim, portray these three figures, because I think it tells us a lot about how a person in a position of power, which is what all of these three people are supposed to behave, or shouldn't behave. So I start with Elimelech. Perhaps the most famous, although a little bit difficult to understand on its own passage, to explain, everybody has to explain. You know, Boaz, you don't have to explain anything, but you do have to explain why Elimelech dies, other than the fact that Sof Adam Lamus, and you do have to explain why is it that the Goel is not willing to take the second half of the package. What does he mean when he says, Lo Ashris Nachlasi? But Chazal have things to say, common things about Boaz that I think highlight certain things in the text. So the Gemara Bava Basra, which is the last source on the first page, says, Tanu Rabbanan ein yotze me'eretz l'chutz la'aretz ela imkein andu sasayim b'sela. That you're not supposed to leave Eretz Yisrael, presumably a resident of Eretz Yisrael, when there's a famine, unless the cost of two sa'ah of grain already reaches a sela, which apparently was pretty expensive. And when food has become that expensive, I guess we, some of us understand, hopefully mostly in a small way, we're privileged that it's not quite as painful for many of us as it is for others, we see what inflation is. There's not, except for infant formula, there's not the hunger, Baruch Hashem. At least not here. So Amar Rabbi Shimon, the Emasai, Bisman She'ena Motze Likach. If it's not only that it's expensive, but the shelves in the store are bare. Right? Sometimes you go into the store and you see the prices have been raised and there's nothing on the shelves. Bisman She'motze Likach, Afilu Omda Sa Besela Lo Yatza. Lo Yetze. If you can find to buy, but it's so expensive. It's not only one sella for two sa. It's one sella for one sa. You're still not supposed to leave. V'chein haye Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, Elimelech machlon v'chilyon, gedolei hador hayu, ufarnesei hador hayu. They were gedolim. I don't know if that means gadol in the sense of Torah, possibly, and they were certainly the gevirim of that generation. They were the parnosim. They were the ones who were responsible for supporting the community when support was needed. Umimnei manenshu. Why were they punished? Umimnei sheyatzu me'eretz l'chutz la'aretz. Because they left Eretz Yisrael. So, on some level, that seems a little bit harsh. Just for the fact that they left Eretz Yisrael, as I said before, Avram Avinu left Eretz Yisrael also. So the question is, what really is going on behind this? What is the issue with the fact that they left? Now, it could be just that it's the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, but I think, actually, the Gemara leaves unstated what the Midrashim fill in. And here, there are several Midrashim that I think have something to say about the character, at least Chazal perceived in Elimelech. The first passage is from Rus Rabbah. It's the first source on the second sheet. V'hatanya b'shas hadever b'shas milchama kinos haregel u'b'shas ra'avon pazer haregel. At a time of plague, at a time of war, that's a time to batten down the hatches and go hide in your house. But when there's famine, it's time to spread the regel. It means you go anywhere you need to go in order to get food. So if that's the case, lama nenash Elimelech? Why was Elimelech punished? The answer is al yedei shehipil liban shel Yisrael aleihem, because he deflated the spirit of the tzibur. And the Medrash goes on to give a parable. I'm going to skip that for the moment. But if you go to the second to last line, the Medrash states, Kach Elimelech haya migdolei hamedina umiparnasei hador. He was one of the most prominent citizens. He was one of the most wealthy citizens. Uchesheba'u shnei ra'avon. When the years of famine came, Amar Ashav kol Yisrael, misavavim sachai. Now everybody's going to surround my house. They're all going to be at my door. Zebekupaso vezebekupaso. Each with their basket, asking for me to support them. Amar ubarach lo mipneihem. He fled. Harehu dechsev ayelach ish mi beis lechem Yehuda. I suspect that there's a pun entailed there, which is he went from Beis Lechem Yehuda. He was the one who was supposed to provide the food. And when people needed him, and presumably he was capable of supporting them, he ran away. So here you have the situation. Elimelech is capable to some extent of supporting the community. And when he's needed, instead of opening his storehouses, he runs away. Fascinatingly, coupled with that, is another comment in Rus Rabba, which is the next passage. V'shem ha'ish Elimelech, Rabbi Meir hayadore shemos, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Kar hayadore shemos. They like to interpret people's names. V'shem ha'ish Elimelech, shahaya omer, Eli tavo malchus. The kingship is worthy for me. I suspect that there are multiple valences to this medrash, but the one that I would just sort of highlight is the following. Elimelech clearly thought that he was deserving of kavod. He thought that everybody should come bow to me. The same person who, when people came to in a situation of need, closed his doors and ran away. But he was certainly covetous. He was certainly desirous of the honor. Honor or perhaps power. There is a third take on Elimelech, which blames him in a certain way for a different reason, which is the last source on this page. It's Vayihi bimei shefot hashoftim. Kach hayu osim bizmano osozman she'elimelech shofet haya b'shoftim. Elimelech was a judge. V'hu ish zroah, he was a person of power, not in a negative sense. V'anashim rabim tachas yada. And he had many people who answered to him. V'haya roah hatzara v'haro'a v'lo haya mazir l'chatoim l'ashub me'risham. He saw people sinning, and the famine was a punishment for the sin, and he didn't try to stop them from sinning. And instead of doing that, v'shav l'alachas b'nafsho, Mibes lechem lagur b'steimoav lahachayos nefesho b'ra'av v'nefesh ishto b'ra'av v'nefesh banav. So instead of rebuking them, he fled, and he didn't know v'lo haya yodea ki atorah techaye nefesh ba'aleha v'lo hav le'olam. So basically, Elimelech was a person who had the power to affect communal behavior. And instead of accepting the responsibility, instead of recognizing that it was his job to engage, I guess, in tochacha or engage in mishpat, shefot hashoftim, and thereby avert the rav. Instead, he tried to basically care for himself only, and thus he runs to base. He runs from Beis Lechem Yehuda to Shdei Moav. So the picture of Elimelech then, fundamentally, is the individual who has the capability, and theoretically has the ability, but he shirks his own responsibility. He shirks his responsibility because he can provide financially. He shirks his responsibility because he doesn't want to engage in the nitty-gritty of being a leader. Of course, he likes the honor of being a leader. He's Elimelech, Eli Tavo Malchus. And one last note about Elimelech. The Psikta Zutrasa, which is the first source on sheet 3, reiterates the theme about Elimelech being capable of supporting the people. But there's a line in there which is very, very striking, because it reminds me of a different passage in the Medrash. If you go to four lines from the bottom, Amru, they said, Im Neshev Khan, if we remain here in Eretz Yisrael, in Yehuda, Yu Ovrim Visharim, Vishavim, Michalimis Mamonenu, the wayfarers will consume our assets. Every day the poor Jews will be crying out to us to support them. Let's get away from them. V'sofam shemesu b'chutz laretz. Their end was they died in chutz laretz. V'shema tomar mamonam nishar. Perhaps at least their assets survived. Harehu omer. Naomi says when she comes back, ani meleya halachti v'reikam heshivani Hashem. The reason I'm struck by that language is because that idea of the wayfarers, of coming to destroy their property, echoes a passage in the Tosefta, Meseches Sota, which speaks about the downfall of Sodom. The chet of Sodom was that they had everything in the world. They had gold and silver, everything came out of their land. And their first concern was to prevent anybody else, any strangers from coming by and partaking and sharing in their wealth. And they said, Bo nishakeach hasaregel mibeinenu. Let's make sure there are no wayfarers here. There are no over mishavim. We will give them not exactly the welcome you would hope to get in a hotel like this, but we'll give them the not good treatment, and they won't come. And there is a suggestion here, in my mind, in the Medrash, is that Elimelech's philosophy was the philosophy of Sodom. Basically, not my problem. I'm my problem, you're your problem. Then, let's go to the Goel now. So the Goel is certainly neither in the Medrash nor in the text portrayed in as negative a light as Elimelech. But the question is, what is it that gives the Goel cold feet? Why is it that the Goel is willing to make the financial investment of redeeming these fields, but he's not willing to marry Rus? So Rashi, in what is a very famous interpretation, says that Penashchisis Nachalasi, Rashi says Zari. It refers to his children. Because it says Lo Yavo Amoni Umavi Bikal Hashem. And Rashi just comments, and the Midrashim cite this as well. V'ta'a ba'amoni v'lo amonis. He made a mistake. He didn't know that prohibition of an Ammonite and a Moabite marrying into the community only applies to the men. It doesn't apply to the women. So at least in Rashi's view, it is a halachic concern that he has, and the Medrash has a whole dialogue about this, about challenging whether or not this was true or not. But that's what Rashi says. Ibn Ezra offers two interpretations, really very much of both different from one another and certainly different than Rashi's. The first one Ibn Ezra offers, Penashchisis Nachlasi, is Hoysa lo nachala rabba. He had a large inheritance. So what was the issue? So Ibn Ezra doesn't explain. But I presume that the concern was that if he married Rus, there would be children, and that would take away from his already existing children. Right? He has Nachala Rabba, and he doesn't want to sort of share that with another family. Not really sure why that should be a concern. They would be his children too, which may tell you something, but that's what the first interpretation is. The Yesh Omer, perhaps a more understandable concern, is Remez al Ishta. Now, it was a reference to the fact that his wife would not be so happy, which presumably is a little bit more understandable, although I don't know what that means exactly in their polygamous society, and how communal responsibility would have been viewed. If you think about the mitzvah of Yibum, which is, I think, the very famous Ramban notes that this seems to be a form of Yibum, but one that the Torah allowed. The Torah, originally Yibum, the Ramban suggests, was a very broad practice of all relatives. Then the Torah prohibited a lot of the Arayos, but only allowed a brother's wife with no children. And then the Minhag, the Ramban suggests, the Ramban in Parshas Vayeshev suggests, was to allow to do Yibum once you move beyond the circle of Arayos that the Torah prohibited. So in that context, the fact that one was married already, on the one hand, again, we are in a monogamous society, so the whole idea of polygamy seems very odd to us. But in their context, it might have been seen as a basic moral obligation. And it was understood within families that when there was a woman who had lost her husband in the family, there was an obligation of someone in the family to take her in. So for one of these two reasons, Ibn Ezra suggests that the Goel balked when the deal came with Rus. The last two interpretations are actually rather interesting. The Alshich suggests, he quotes the Gemara in Yevamos that Daf Yomi did a few weeks ago, asking why are Gerim ba'olam hazem unim v'yisurim ba'malayim? Why are they in a downtrodden state and they suffer various kinds of yisurim? So the Gemara offers its own interpretations, but sociologically speaking, it's probably a good degree of truth in that. So the Alshich suggests that the Goel looked at Rus and decided that if he were to marry her, this might somehow affect his own estate. Because for whatever reasons, the Gemara offers that it's viewed as a punishment, not just as a natural consequence of being on the lowest rung of society. So the Goel basically decided he didn't want to take a chance on losing his estate to marry Rus. It really wasn't worth it for him. As a geores, it was too dangerous. So basically, it wasn't about his wife. It was really about Rus's standing in society. And finally, not the same, but really most interesting, the Malbim. And I should have really presented the previous verse as well. So you may remember from Parshas Vayeshev that Onan was not interested in doing Yibum. He wasn't interested was because ki lo lo ye hazara. I don't think we really understand this, but somehow the children weren't going to be his. They would be his biologically, but somehow the child of the Yibum that's born from the Yibum is Yikarei al Shem Achiv Hames, whatever that exactly means. And Onan perceived that this would not really be his child. So the Malbim says on Vayomer HaGoel, Pena Shchisas Nachlasi Shelo Yikare Al Shemi. In the previous passage he explains that the Goel was very happy to redeem both the portion that was related, the field related to Nami, and the portion that was Rus's. But what Boaz said to the Goel was, Naomi's field you will acquire with the normal Darkei Haknaya, the normal means of acquisition. But the way to acquire the fields of Rus that she was connected to is by marrying her. And he said, Lo uchal lig'oli. He says, Diak milas li. Ritzono lomar shelo uchal sheyeh la'atzmei v'yeh li al shemi. It won't be mine. Im kein ani yare pen ashchis esnach lasi asher atar shelo yikare al shemi. Because, again, ways I don't think we understand, he perceived that the redemption of the fields would somehow not be his, and this is very much parallel to Onan, who is not a very positive figure in our tradition. So therefore he said, you know what? I'm not interested. If this is not in there for me, if this is not Nikres al Shmi, if it's not going to have my name on it, not interested. So that was the Goel. The Goel was a person who was willing to put himself out financially. But when certain personal issues seem to come into play, all of a sudden, he gets cold feet. It's one thing for him to make the financial sacrifice to redeem the fields, but it's another to ask him to get involved with Rus. That he's not willing to do. And then finally we come to Boaz. We're introduced to Boaz. Ulunamimo dat lisha, ishki borchayel mi mishpachas elimelech ushmo Boaz. The Medrash comments here, and it starts on the bottom of it really starts on the top of the fourth sheet. Harishoyim heim kodmin lishmon. When the wicked people are introduced in Tanakh, and it says, the name is so-and-so, so when you say Golyas Shemo, Naval Shemo, Sheva ben Bichri Shemo, so the Rishoyim, their name comes before the name. Heber Aval Tzadikim Shmon Kodmim. When you're talking about a tzaddik, the name comes first, meaning Ushmo Kish, Ushmo Shaul, Ushmo Yishai, Ushmo Mordechai, Ushmo Elkan, Ushmo Boaz, Domim Leboram, just like God, Shenemar, Ushmi Hashem Lo Nodati Lohem. This seems to be at first glance an odd medrash, and I didn't know what to make of it, so I had an inkling, so I went over to a couple of my students in our base medrash, and I said to them, tell me, what do you think? Two people introduced themselves. One of them says, my name is Jonathan. And I did that wrong. My name is Jonathan. The other one says, Jonathan is my name. Do you hear a difference between the two? And they immediately picked up on it, which I think was what was going on, which is, it depends who's the center of attention there. Jonathan is my name. Jonathan is very much the center of attention. The answer is, it's me. When you ask what my name is, so my name is so-and-so. Okay, you asked the question, I answered it. So the Medrash, I think, is telling us the difference between the Rishayim and the Tzadikim is where the center of gravity is, where the center of focus is. The center of focus for Boaz was not Boaz. It was Ushmo Boaz. The center of focus for Goliath, or Shevam Bichri, was Goliath Shemo. It was all about Goliath. So the first thing we're introduced in the Medrash to Boaz, which I think really tells you everything about Boaz, is his focus was outward. And if you take a look at the go back to the story for a second, if you think about it, the normal response of somebody encountering someone of a lesser rung in society is to not see them, to not recognize them. Okay, so you have to let her gather in the field because the Torah says so. But Boaz, that's not the way he behaves. He sees Rus, and he connects with her. He sees someone who is below his social standing, and that actually doesn't matter to him, presumably because his social standing is not actually what's important to him. And then you talk about Boaz, who is a person in position of tremendous power. The Medrash describes him, Naomi describes him in the next passage as one of the Gedolei Hadar as well. And then we read about what happens in the Goren. And what happens in the Goren really is, the Midrashim pick up on this. I don't want to say it's a rated R episode, but it's certainly, there is a tremendous degree of, you would call, sexual tension in the scene in the Goren. It's been written about, and it's clearly there in the Medrash. And what's relevant for our purposes is there is both temptation and opportunity on the part of Boaz. So the Medrash states, the second source on the last page, Amar Rabbi Yose, Shlosha Heim Sheba Yitzvan Latokvam. There were three individuals whose desire came to overpower them. V'nizdarzu alav kol echad v'yechad b'shvua. Each one had to swear that they would not sin. And they were Yosef, David, and Boaz. And Boaz minayin shenemar chai Hashem shichvi araboker. So the Medrash continues. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kol oso hayom, kol oso alayla haya yitzro mekachrgo. All night his Yetzer Hara was telling him, At Ponui, you're single. Boaz's wife had died, according to the Medrash. Umavakesh isha, you need a wife. Vehi Pnuya, umavakesh ish. Amoru Boaz lovet, kia lecha leisha. Go ahead. The opportunity is there. V'nishba leYitzro of Amar, Chai Hashem she'ini nogei aba. I swear I won't do anything. You have to think about this for a second. Boaz is a powerful man, and some people in our society didn't always understand this, that sometimes consenting behavior between parties is not truly consenting when one of them is very powerful and one of them is very vulnerable. So Boaz had all these things to tell himself, all these justifications. It's reasonable. You like her, she likes you. It's an opportunity for both of you. Boaz said no. Now, so Boaz, that part he got. And then it says, Vatishkav maragalosav araboker. So he wants her to get up. He tells her to stay there, but he doesn't want her to go leave in the middle of the night. That would have been the obvious thing. If you don't want anybody to know that she's there, you don't tell her shechvi araboker. So why does he do that? Well, the answer is, I think, clear in the in another medrash, which is Parsha Zayin Simen Gimel, Vayavo ha'ir. He comes to the city, Velo hayetzarech lemeimar elav atavo ha'ir. V'at amr svayavo here. It should have been that Rus went to the city. He wanted to get her out of there first. So why is it vayavo ha'ir? He came to the city. The answer is, elam alameit shahaya mahalich ima shalayifku ba'achem en abachurim. In other words, in the previous matter, she didn't read it, he was concerned about chilul shem shemayim that people should say. But at the same time, he understood that he had a responsibility to make sure that she was safe. He couldn't just let her walk home, because, God forbid, one of the young men who saw an opportunity there, one of the young men who was more powerful than Rus, would take advantage of her. So on the one hand, he was deeply concerned about not doing the wrong thing, not abusing his power, and he's also deeply concerned about protecting her in the process. The next medrash states, "Vatomer shvi viti, Rav Huna b'shem Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak, hatzadikim hein shalahein hein, v'lav shalahein lav. Shenema kilo yishkora ish kim kilaha davarayom. Naomi understood, listening to the whole story. Ruth told her everything that happened. Naomi understood the character of Boaz. And when she heard his behavior, she understood immediately that when Boaz said yes, his yes was a yes, and if he had said no, his no was a no. And that is the characteristic, that's the character of Boaz. Hain Sedek. When you say something, then that's something that you keep. So, we have three characters here. Three very different characters. Three different wealthy people. Three people in positions of opportunity and responsibility. And each of them behaves differently. Elimelech shirks his responsibility completely. He's not willing to share of himself or of his money. He won't support the poor. He won't undertake the responsibility of communal leadership of enforcing Torah so as to prevent the Rav. He simply thinks that he's going to run away. And then there's the Goel, who is willing to make sacrifices. He's certainly willing to undertake financially what presumably was some kind of a sacrifice. But when it comes all of a sudden to, in fact, putting himself out personally, so then it seems that he's unwilling to do so. To marry Rus, that's a bridge too far to cross. And then there's Boaz, who was wealthy, who was powerful. And instead of seeing a vulnerable person that he can take advantage of, or ignore for that matter, instead, Boaz sees Rus for who she is and doesn't see her as any lesser than him. The tour in Yeridea, in his introduction to Hilchos Tzedakah, mentions a number of reasons, a number of things that are important, that are very important about giving tzedakah. I often quote two of them, well, the one that I usually like to quote, but is not the one that I really want to talk about now, is that the Torah says that when a person gives tzedakah, they shouldn't say, Echser mi mamona litno laniyim. How can I reduce my bank account? How can I lower the number of my bank account to give it to the poor? Because in the language of the Torah, ki yesh lo ladash ena mamon shelo, ela pikadon lasos bo ritzon hamafkid. Basically, everything that we have belongs to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He is the grantor. We are the trustees, and our responsibility is to do what he tells us with it. If you, in fact, were a trustee on an estate, it's probably not so difficult to give away the money in accordance with the instructions of the grantor, because it's not yours, and you don't perceive it that way. So that is true. And I think that that speaks to something about Elimelech's character. Elimelech's character was Midas Sedom, which was Shalish, Shaliv, Shalach, Shalach. I don't want anybody coming. I don't want the Ovrim Veshavim coming to be Mechale Mamoni. So I'm just leaving. As opposed to, at least he didn't do what Anshei Sedom did to them, but his attitude was that of Sedom. But I'm more interested, actually, in the preceding line. The Torah writes, Gam yiten libo ki hu galgal hachozer ba'olam. V'sofa adam lavo lide midazo. Poverty is a cycle. V'imlohu, if you might be rich today, but tomorrow you might be poor. And if not you, yavo beno o ben beno. It will be your child or your grandchild. And the question is, how do you understand this statement? Some would say that this is simply the social contract. And in some ways, you can understand it this way. It's a very pragmatic approach to tzedakah. You scratch my back because I'll scratch your back. I give to the poor because one day I may be in need and they will provide for me. If I don't provide for those in need now, they won't provide when I need. The safod yispedune, the kavar yitberune, the dale yidlune. And that, I believe, actually, was the perspective of the Goel. The Goel understood tzedakah as being a pragmatic calculation. He did understand his responsibility. He understood his financial responsibility. But in effect, you would say there was a little bit of a quid pro quo. He had to evaluate, regardless of what his moral obligations were, what was the cost, actually, of performing the mitzvah. And the Goel was willing to sacrifice financially, but when he was asked to marry Rus, what that would entail, in effect, connecting with a lower element in society, that was something that he couldn't do. He couldn't marry below. He couldn't marry the giyores, the ones who are me'unim and yisurin ba'im aleihem. He couldn't marry the individual whose children would, in effect, not be nikrash al-shmam, Because that price was too much. There wasn't enough in it for him to do it. Because the Goel looked at Rus and he saw someone who was, in contemporary terminology, the other. But Boaz was very different. See, Galgal HaChozer Ba'olam can be seen in a very different light. Galgal HaChozer Ba'olam can be seen as, I scratch your back, you scratch mine, because it could happen, I'll become poor. But there's another way of understanding Galgal HaChozer Ba'olam. Galgal HaChozer Ba'olam means when I look at someone who's less fortunate than I am, it's not just that I can become poor, it's that I connect and identify with that person. It's not that I know that in 10 years or 20 years I or my children or grandchildren will be poor, but I look at that poor person now and I see myself in them. I see that that is me, the Ani. I connect with them on a human level. And when I give tzedakah, it's not because I might need it in the future. It's in effect because I need now. There's a very famous medrash Rashi comments on when Rus says that she comes back to Naomi and she asks, who was the guy? And she says, Shem ha'ish asher asisi imo hayom Boaz. The person with whom I did today was Boaz. And Chazal comment, what do you mean that she did with him? Boaz was the one who did for Rus. And they talk about how the giver, the recipient of the tzedakah, is giving more to the giver than the giver is giving to the recipient. But I think what's going on there is the fact that when the giver gives, they become one with the recipient. They identify, they understand, not because later they might be, but because they see them now. And that's, I think, exactly what Boaz's behavior was with Rus. Boaz connected with Rus immediately. Rus saw herself, I'm a nobody, right? Why are you even talking to me? And Boaz looked at his Zohar and saw a tzedekes. And it was just because you're a Nara Moabiyah, that doesn't make you any different than I am. And that really was who Boaz was. Boaz was a gvir who gave not because they gave, we're going to give him a big plaque, not because it was a good investment PR for his reputation, not because he related to the people who were in front of him, but not because he understood the mitzvah in front of him, but because Boaz connected with the people in front of him. Boaz connected with Rus. The Goel was not able to do that. To redeem the fields was possible. To marry Rus was inconceivable. They were two different places in society. But the character of Boaz was to recognize that the young woman he saw in front of him was the same person as he was. And it didn't matter that he was Migdolei Hador and she was Nara Moaviyah. And that is why Boaz is who Boaz was. And ultimately, Boaz was the progenitor of David HaMelech. Because in order to be a true leader, a leader has to understand one's responsibility, that one is not in leadership, one is not entrusted with the job of being a parnas for oneself, not for the kavod, not for any other benefits that it brings, but rather because tzedakah is a galgal achozer ba'olam, is that you understand that you sit in one place now, but at the very same time, you're sitting in the same place that everybody else is sitting. Yes?
My question, you mentioned in terms of the Goel, something that I never thought of or heard beforehand. You made it sound like there was an upfront financial investment that he had to make, but I mean, I always thought that it would still pay off because he's getting the field, he's getting access to these fields, and that would certainly be something that was financially lucrative there. So I guess I wasn't quite sure exactly what you were saying.
I don't understand what's going on. There's some type of an economic institution, but when you look in Parshas Bahar, I think it's very clear, it seems very clear that the Goel is not making a self-interested investment. In the context of the Torah, it's very clear. The Goel redeems the field, but in the Yovel, it doesn't remain his. It goes to the member of the family. So it's not, you know, it's not a total stranger. And so I don't know what's going on here, but my assumption is that this is not a real estate investment opportunity for the Goel. This is really some type of a sacrifice. And it wasn't a given that he would say yes. He didn't balk ultimately. He was willing to do that. So I imagine, very much not related to this year, you have to ask someone who studies the ancient Near East if there are any insights that we know. We may not have the information to understand sort of what this family geula was. Yes?
Any thoughts on how Boaz is essentially able to link the two? Why could the Goel just not come back and say, I'll do do one. I'll do Naomi's. I'm not going to do that. How could he do that?
So I'll leave this as the last question just because I don't want to step as next speaker. I haven't seen issue addressed, but there is a concept that there is no geula l'chatzoin. That when a person comes to redeem, Rashi might even, I don't know if he quotes it on this week's parasha, but it's in the Medrash Halach on this week's parasha, that when a person comes to be goel asada, they can't go to the person they sold it to and buy half the field. A geula has to be a geula. You either buy the whole thing back or it's going to wait till the yovel, I believe. So if I'm correct, I'm pretty sure that's the halacha. So it may be that this was viewed as, and Boaz does present it that way, right? You know, b'yom kadosa chasad, chasadem yad mimi, umei esra samovia. Stop, you know, Eishes Hameis Kanisa. So it's presented as, it seems like it's really one unit, and Geula has to be done as one, not broken up. Whatever the reasons for that, I don't know what the reason for the Gzeres HaKasav is, but that would seem to be, that really was one unit.